Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I'm your host, Clayton Fletcher. This episode is being recorded on July 12th, while we're all still basking in the glow of the World Series of Poker. The main event is on day six at the time of this recording. Of course, this won't come out for a couple weeks, and by then we'll all be back in our respective lives doing back to reality kind of stuff. But I have a special guest this week, and special for a lot of reasons. First of all, he's one of kind of the original TPE guys, one of the founding fathers, if you will, up on the Mount Rushmore of TPE. He was someone who was extremely active both on the site and, of course, on this podcast many years ago. But you guys have not heard this voice in quite a while, so I want to welcome back to the podcast and to the poker world, Tim Kelly, T-Twist himself. How are you, sir?
Man, doing wonderful. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so as the World Series of Poker is kind of wrapping up, how has the summer been?
The summer's been, it's been fantastic. It's been an interesting change from my usual scheduling. I had three friends, English friends, that took off out of England the 29th of April. With a quest in mind, they landed in New York City, rented a car down to AC and across New York State, and drove all the way into Las Vegas. Yeah, it was nuts. 89-day trip. So I want to give a shout out to Rob, Gary, and Kenny. Man, these guys are nuts. So they did it. They arrived into Vegas on the 1st of June, and they experienced the whole month of the WSOP.
And they saw how vast and empty America is on the way. There is a lot of just open road between here and Vegas.
Once you get west of Chicago, you're 5-6 hours before you find any kind of gambling establishment. And you mentioned Mount Rushmore. Let's get something straight. I'm the guy on the bottom looking up to the forehead of the forefathers. I came in a little bit late. I've been very fortunate to be with some great guys, and they've taken care of me along the way. But yeah, so these guys, I ended up driving out and meeting them in halfway out in New York State. We played three or four tournaments, some cash. They came into Niagara Falls. They did their thing with me in my home area, and they took off, and they made their way safely. And they every couple hours, they just stopped at a casino
tournament. And how do you know these guys?
Rob Warburton, who actually cashed the main event. He went late day four, had a nice little score.
Way to go, Rob.
Yeah, that a boy, Warbs. He reached out to me through Tournament Poker Edge because I was on the coaching page back then. And he just reached out to me via email. And so I answered, how any kind of coaching relationship starts. It was very generic like that. But I must say, in the last 7-8 years, there's no coaching relationship anymore. Rob's become one of my best friends in life, and it's just been a fantastic friendship meeting.
So you've known Rob for quite a while.
Yeah, of course. He's been to Canada a few times. We spent a couple trips here in Las Vegas. And I told him when I met him, I said, our goal one day is for you to play the main event. And so that came to light this summer. And he put a little glorious run together for his first time getting his feet wet, which was amazing. Put a lot of confidence in him for future events. So that's big for him. And it was great because he handles a lot of my stuff on bigger buy-ins financially as well. He's been an incredible backer that way, always there for whatever I need. Can't say enough.
That's amazing. So you have a relationship with this guy for many, many years. You started out as his coach. He became your backer. And now you guys are friends.
That's right. Basically, I just couldn't picture the guy not in my life at this point. My kids know him. They love him. My wife and his wife have become friends. It's been spectacular.
Now, you haven't been to the World Series of Poker. You played the main event this year. We'll get into that. But before we do, you were telling me before we started recording, there are some pretty good reasons why you haven't been around poker in the last few years. Tell us about that.
Yeah. As we did speak, this will probably be my first time ever really coming out public, what's gone on. Back in September of 2017, I had come out to the series, didn't play a lot of the big events, but was well with the boys. You know, I stayed out for a couple weeks. And when I got home a couple months later, my older brother, I'm one of four boys growing up, I'm three in line. My brother Sean, who was number two in line, he passed away September 7th, 2017. It was an absolute just shock for anyone, any family who experiences any kind of sudden death. It really rocks your whole world. I really had to take a step back from poker. I talked with Derek and Diego. I knew I couldn't handle doing the general manager duties that I was doing for 5 years previous with Tournament Poker Edge. The community in TPE Nation needs people, needs someone in there that wants to and is able to get the job done for the nation. I just couldn't commit to that anymore because my head was a bit gone. So I took a few months off from poker, and I didn't play another live event until February of 2018 at the WPT Fallsview. I played the early 1K, and Clayton, I just knew the whole time, man, that I my mind wasn't ready for poker. Like 10 hands in, you can't shake your brother off your mind. You're thinking your mind's going crazy. It's just not poker.
And this is how many months after his death?
He passed away in the September, so this was February of 2018. So what's that, 4 or 5 months?
Six.
Maybe, yeah, give or take, yeah. I had a decent run. I finished, I think, in the top 120 out of like 1,400 runners. Had a decent cash, but still deep down inside, you know you're kind of lighting money on fire. So I backed away again.
Yeah, no, so we talk a lot on this podcast, as you know, about, you know, mindset and distraction and how to win in today's poker environment. You really need to have all your wits about you. I would commend you on just trying to get back on the horse, as it were, trying to move on after such a tragedy. By the way, I'm so sorry about your brother. That's horrible.
Yeah.
But you felt, as you said, very early in the event that you shouldn't be there.
I mean, bang on. Like, to me, it was like, man, I'm not going to play any more events here because I know that I'm just simply not ready from a mindset standpoint. So a few months went by. We move into March, April, May, and we start getting into May, and I'm starting to feel a little better. I've come to terms with what's happened, and I've accepted it, and you got to make the move on move, I guess we'll call that. So I did, and I planned on coming out to Vegas again, and I was going to play my first ever main event. My biggest event to date was a 5K on a circuit back in the day where I final tabled. It was a decent score, but I had never played a 10K. So we started spinning the wheels, Rob and I, of making some moves to get out here to play the main.
And this is back in 2018, last year.
My birthday is June 10th, and my wife and I end up going over to some friend's house for my birthday. And I know I'm leaving in a couple weeks to head to the main, and I get a phone call, and it's from one of my best friends. He was my best man at my wedding, and I'm like, yeah, Jan, Trevor's calling. He's wishing me a happy birthday. I answer the phone, and more ugliness takes place. A friend of mine from my hometown growing up had moved to where I live now. He worked with my wife, wasn't my wife at the time, but he said to her, I got a buddy back in Brantford that I think you guys will hit it off. He introduced us. We're still together today. We have two beautiful boys, Cole and Kyle, amazing kids. But Adam lost his life on June 9th in China, the day before my birthday. And by the time the news got over here and I got the call, it was just complete tragedy. Him being in China, it takes a 4 or 5 week process to repatriate him back into the country. And I just wasn't willing to leave knowing that I was about to bury one of my best friends. And
so you're still kind of reeling from the loss of your brother, and now you lose one of your best friends the day before your birthday when you were planning a trip to Vegas for the 2018 World Series of Poker.
Yeah, it was like, it was just everything came at once, and it was too much of a risk. I mean, if he would have been able to be repatriated a week or so later, but then I'm on the other side of it where I don't think I'm mentally again I'd be ready for it. So
no, of course not. Yeah, of course not.
I had to make the decision to just say, again, this is not going to be right. The mindset's not going to be there, and you're possibly lighting 10,000 American on fire at this point. So made the decision to not come out last year.
Well, I think it was obviously the correct one. I mean, we come out here. I come out here every year. This is my 12th World Series of Poker, and once we get here, it's just all poker all the time. We all become kind of obsessed and single-minded. We try not to, but because there, you know, are bracelets to be won and just, you know, buckets and buckets of cash to be won, a lot of us get very focused. But then, you know, hearing your story is kind of a wake-up call for me, and I'm sure for a lot of the listeners, that there are so many things in life that are just more important than a game of cards.
I mean, very well said. Family is at the top. We know that. Friends, associates, even there. Poker's so far down on the scale that, like, we do it for love, but, man, there's so much more that we love, and priorities just take precedence in it. And it was tough. It was really a tough time in my life. So
that was over a year ago now. And
yes, it was.
Can you at least tell me that there haven't been any other substantial tragedies in your life in the last 13 months?
No, there hasn't been any. You know, things have been actually really good. I decided to get, like we were talking about, I had dabbled with online because I was home. I wasn't just willing to go take the life role in the bank role and go play live. Sitting at home, clicking buttons, having your music, your environment is a lot easier to deal with on a poker level rather than out there on the circuit or any professional tour, right? So I was playing, and, you know, I played a lot. I did okay. But I made a commitment at the start of this year to myself. I got involved with some really good people on the online side of it that I've known for years. And they were willing to take care of me financially. And it was such a nice reward for me and them, because 2019, January, February, March, April, it was pretty awesome.
So here's we want to get into the awesomeness, because, you know, your story begins with the loss of your brother, the loss of your friend, having to cancel your plans to participate in the 2018 World Series, and all of these sad things that happened. You didn't even mention, but you told me before we started recording that you even lost a dog along the way. I mean, it's just a lot of, like, sadness in your life and a lot of grief to overcome. And now, kind of from when the calendar turned 2019, you have been on an absolute tear. Tell people about it.
Yeah, things have been going well. When you got, you know, you got good people in your life, good backers, smart poker people, good people to bounce information off, hand sharing, reviewing your sessions, all that stuff. You need to do that. It doesn't matter. Trust me, people. Like, if just playing is great, but the extracurricular activity to put in for yourself is what gets you there. So, good people in my life. The results started coming in, you know, like, they speak for himself. Anyone can go database, whatever. So,
yeah, but don't make them do that. Let's brag a little bit. Go ahead. I know you're Canadian, but you can brag a little bit about kind of just give us a few of the highlights so far from 2019 online before the World Series.
Just, I mean, if you look at the graph, it's up and down. The ROI's there. Just some bigger scores, 888, couple 1Ks. I won it 1 week, got second the next. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, 162, big 162 win, $85 hyper win. The $530 PLO high roller win was the best, because I've just been dabbling and learning mixed games in the last couple years. And it's funny, I was talking to some guys at some of the live tables that I said, next 2020, I'm gonna unleash the hounds on a little bit of the lower buy-in mix stuff and see how I do.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, if you even have any kind of competency in games like, you know, stud high-low or Raz, any of those kind of games, just the field of players that are bracelet hunting, they don't really know how to play the games. They're just, you know, maybe they have a bracelet bet and they know the fields will be smaller in those events. So if you're even an average player in those games, it might be plus EV to enter those buy-ins next year.
It is. It's more going to be a learning curve for me. I look forward to, I've never actually, I played a couple circuit events, some 365 PLOs back in the day. You know, you just, whatever. I was not ready for that back then. You're just throwing 365 and
four cards. It's so much fun.
Well, the thing was, and it's funny, I like to say to people, instead of asking them, do you like mixed games? I like to say, what are you into? Equity gained or equity denial? And if their face scrunches up, I can instantly tell they're not a mixed game player. So that's right. I just, as you know, from all the years of the early 2000s all the way through to an online gaming game big, it was all no limit hold'em. And it was all equity gain games and making plays based on that. But the learning equity denial games has been just fun. It's been the next level of what my brain needed to keep me interested in poker.
Why don't you get into that a little bit? I'm sure that some of our listeners don't know what you're talking about. So explain equity denial as opposed to equity gain.
Well, equity gained and Hold'em is, you know, you base the basis of a lot of good bluffs. We're going to run a lot of our lines based on equity gained on certain cards, flop, turn, river, so we can make our plays accordingly, bluff. Equity deny is being able to read the board, and like stud, for instance, you read the board, you see what you got, they see what you got, you can bet based on you've just denied all their equity paths, right? So just using those methods and, you know, and getting people to lay down hands they probably shouldn't based on one card coming out is kind of the thing. And the other thing is, now I'm hearing all the guys, and I really want to just sit in and watch, is the short deck PLO cash games. These guys are madmen. So they sit with six. There's four cards left, and they go, if we really want to get really nuts, we play seven, and every card is out. And so it's I think his name's Epstein. He won one of the bracelets this year, and he hangs out with a lot of the big guys high road, but that's their thing now. So you want to talk about equity deny, get the whole deck out there and play and see what happens.
Card denial. Oh, there's just no more cards left.
What's going on here? Someone's got to have something.
Yeah, no, the short deck is kind of changing the game. There's not as much waiting. It's good times. So you started your year off by, you know, all of those impressive online accomplishments, making all those online final tables and some big scores there. So your confidence heading into this World Series must have been very high.
It was. I had said to some friends as I was getting out of town, I said, you know, at my age, 44, my experience in the game, my time I've put in, the studying I've done, the results that have backed me up, I said, if I'm not ready to play this now, like, when will I ever be ready? It was easy to make the decision. With everything that had gone on in the past, with the way the start of 2019, and having good financial backers that also, like, there's nothing better as a player to when your backer almost has as much confidence in you or possibly more. It's such a wonderful feeling, you know? So you always can go to him and talk. If you're having a bad day, he's going to bring you back up. And having those backers that don't really understand poker, I've had them in the past, you suffer the bust out hand. And then you go suffer talking to the guy who doesn't understand the bust out hand. And I'm just like, I almost had enough of that.
No, so that sounds miserable. Yeah. If I had a backer, I would want it to be somebody who just said, maybe doesn't know anything about poker and just trust me 100% to make good decisions. Or somebody that looks up to me as a player and thinks that I'm so good that they don't want to question any decision I make. I would hate to have to lose the tournament and then go explain to someone, oh, I'm sorry I lost your money, here's what happened, and what'd you do that for? No, that would just, to me, that would set me over the edge. I'd be on life tilt for the next 20 years if that were my situation with a backer. No, thank you.
Yeah, and then you get into guys that really understand, and it's a breath of fresh air because they don't even want to hear it. They've reviewed your hand histories. They've watched you play live. They see the results. They have the belief and the confidence in you. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
They don't want explanations on the side as well. So
yeah. It's nice. So how did you work through the recovery process of all of the tragedy in your life? How did you manage to get through that and now start having success in poker again?
Jennifer Kelly. My wife, just a rock in every aspect of my life. Being able to do this, come out, it's nice to give her a shout out right now because in the past, I don't know if I've ever been able to, but you know, you get a lot of guys and poker players, they're young, they don't have girlfriends, they're not married, they're not grounded. I think it was one of the best things to happen to me, you know, like it gave me something to play for. It gave me drive and will to want to do things for her because she wants to do things for me. And she gave me, like I said, Cole and Kyle, 11 and 9, two boys, unbelievable. They're our complete world. But yeah, my wife, it's without her, none of this is happening. Absolutely zero.
I have to say, that is so beautiful. That is really beautiful. So what else has been beautiful is you've had some success here this summer, haven't you?
Well, success is funny. You measure success because we're poker players. We always measure it with a bottom line. I can't do that this summer because I didn't have any tournament scores. I came out late. I made day three of the main. I busted 400 off the money. Stuck around, though, to rail my buddy, Rob, and pandemonium breaking out on the bubble was it was incredible to watch. clock, floor, just absolutely pandemonium, right? Played a couple cash sessions. They were good. But to say I'm any kind of cash professional would be an absolute lie. I'm good, competent, but I would never expect myself to rely on myself to make a living.
Well, this is a tournament podcast anyway. That's right. We don't want to hear about that.
Played a little, I like to call it a little elbow rubber. I played a little elbow rubber at the Orleans just to get the feel of a couple human beings on each side of me. 14 from the money, aces cracked by 7-7 on river. So I just picked up my stuff, walked out. Then I went over and I played the main. Played the Venetian 400 yesterday. What an interesting spot to bust there. It was actually the first time I've been donked live in quite some time. You want me to get in there real quick?
Yeah, why don't we? This is a $400 Venetian.
$400 at the Venetian.
And, you know, it's the end of the summer, guys. Most of us have been here for many, many weeks. And the quality of play that you're seeing right now in a $400 Venetian is not the same as it would have been, like, say, late May, early June.
Couldn't agree more. So, guy opened, just to put my stock in the position it was in or in the jeopardy that it was in, was a guy shoved 15, 16 bigs. I looked down at kings. We get it in. He's got ace four of hearts. He flops a flush. Good game. Kind of put me down in, you know, under 30 bigs. Play a few hands here and there, fold a couple, blinds go up. Crazy spot. So it comes to me. I got 13 bigs. I'm in the cutoff. Look down at ace eight of diamonds. I rip it in. Fold from the button, fold for, the small blind woman tanks. I'm thinking, you know, she calls, and this is where I get donked. So she has 17 bigs. I have 12 and change, maybe 12 and a half. 13.5 bigs, thinks he should come along two out of the big blind with 4-4. Yeah, so I have her covered with, she has king jack, ace eight, and king jack can't beat 4-4. So I'm like, are you kidding me, right? Like, if this guy shouldn't be in, shouldn't get in, should be mucking fours obvious instantly, and I should be probably sitting there with 28, 29 big blinds and trying to make something happen. So this was about level 10 or 11.
Yeah, but we should be glad that he did that, because obviously that's proof that the games are as good as they've ever been, as the cards happen to lie this time. He actually had the best hand, but he couldn't possibly have known that with the action in front of him. But let's get into some real strategy. I know you said that you had kind of taken a few notes on some hands that you played. I don't know, did you have one from the main event or from one of the other tournaments that you wanted to discuss?
There's a few good spots from the main. I guess what I'll say is I learned a lot day one. I bagged just under a starting stack, but I was down to like 23 or 24K. And I just simply think I was getting involved in too many hands, which you can tend to do when you have so many chips. But if you get in too many, then you don't have too many chips anymore.
Yeah, well, it feels like nothing when you have like 60,000 in your starting stack and it's like, it's 600 to call. Yeah, why not just call? Yeah, but that can chip away at you pretty quickly, and especially when the pots get bigger on the turn and river, and now you're in a spot with a hand you shouldn't have against an opponent you don't really understand. And yeah, I mean, we've all done that. So yeah, certainly the main event, especially day one, is about survival and patience. And sure, if you want to play some hands, if you feel like you have an edge over your opponents and you want to get involved, especially against a particular opponent who makes an obvious mistake a lot that you can exploit, I'm all for it. But generally speaking, if you're at an average table, you should generally be playing solid values on day one.
I mean, and from a strategy point, everything you just said is exactly the strategy behind it. You're correct. That's how you should approach day one. And, you know, I was down to 24, and I got lucky in hand just from the simple fact of a guy making a huge mistake by calling my overshove of the riv when I boated up, flop top set, and boated up. And he was on queen 10 suited. And he tanked and tanked and tanked and called. It must have been something he seen from me or whatever in some earlier plays where he thought I was bluffing it off. But so I got lucky, got my stack back, fought it up to about 70, and then ended up bagging just under starting stack.
Well, people are not generally good at folding. And one reason we come to play the main event each and every year is because there are some players who really don't understand the value of their hands given the action in front of them. There are many players in the main event who are in there on like a $100 satellite or a bar league that they won. You never know where your opponents started and how they ended up at your table. It's rare on day one of the main event to recognize a lot of your opponents. So that's what makes it the greatest tournament in the world, is that there are people from all walks of life. There are celebrities and football players and and satellite winners. And, you know, we're playing for so much money. And the field in general is, you'll never find a $10,000 buy-in tournament anywhere in the world that is softer than the main event, which is when I lament when I end up at a tough table in the main event, because I know there are so many better tables to be at.
Well, I think we both can agree the Nick Schulman controversy was every poker player in the world agreed with him. The only people that didn't agree with him was WSOP and ESPN.
Yeah, so the way we're hearing things now, Nick Schulman was relieved of his responsibilities as an announcer for the World Series of Poker on ESPN when he said, if you want to learn how to play poker, don't watch the main event.
Yes, but if you're looking to be entertained, this is your venue to watch. Something along those lines, right?
Yeah.
And he's backed by everybody in the poker world on that statement, because it's absolutely 100% spot on. And like I said, the only people who disagree is ESPN and WSOP, which is, that's their prerogative. But I think Nick is an incredible analyst, one of the best I've ever sat back and listened to. He breaks down hands incredibly. He's an intelligent man with the resume to back it up. And I don't agree with ESPN and WSOP on this one whatsoever.
I'm going to withhold my opinion on this just because I've done some work for Poker Productions and I don't want to get in the middle of it, but I'm happy to have you share your opinion on the topic for sure. Cool. Why don't we get into another hand if you have one?
Yeah, so it was an interesting spot. I think we know James McKay, talented players like three to four million in live earnings, and he has an online resume as well back in the day. We were like the second or third hand in on day three. I got ace, king of spades.
So what is our stack at this point, and what are the blinds?
The blinds at day three at this point, I believe, are 12-24.
Okay, so 12-24 to start the day, and we have how much?
I start the day with 147K.
Okay, so after bagging about a starting stack on day one, you ran it up to 140-something on day two.
Yeah, you know something, I came out of the gate on day two really hot, made a few hands, made a huge over shove on the river when I flopped a boat and ended up being the nuts in the end. And Samantha, a female player, I'm not sure of her last name, competent player, Dan O'Brien was at the table, knew her. She had king queen and couldn't get away from it.
Could that be Samantha Abernathy?
I think it's yes, that sounds familiar. I think it was her actually.
Okay.
So it was one of those hands, you know, there's like 60K in the middle. You got the nuts. You're pretty sure that she has a king as well. I fill with king jack offsuit out of the big blind on like four or five ways. And the flop goes king, king, jack. And so there's 60K in the middle once all said and done. And I have like 72 behind and I overshove the pot. And she tanked for a few minutes and just put it in. And I rolled over king jack and she actually threw her hand face up. So I knew she had king, queen.
Yeah, that's a brutal spot for her. I mean, you should have some bluffs in your range, and I don't know that many players would be able to fold king-queen in that spot, especially if it doesn't feel like you could have king-jack a lot, or she's not particularly worried about ace-king, given whatever the preflop action was. That just sounds like quite a cooler for Sam.
It was. It was totally a cooler. And 10 on river was the only reason I thought she maybe could get away from it, putting me on ace-queen. But it didn't happen. So I got really lucky. And then that threw me right up to 231K midday two.
Okay.
I mean, and when they're reporting, I've got people from my family who are looking at home like, hey, you're 85th in this bird. I'm like, they're not poker people who understand how the reporting works. But still, nonetheless, 231K.
So let's fast forward to day three, where we start with 140,000 and ace king. The blinds are 12-24 with the 2400 big blind ante, so that means there's already 6,000 in the pot, and we have 140K, so we have an M of about 24.
Yeah, you got lots in that spot, heaps, as they like to say. So, ace king spades folded around to me, simple raise. I believe I was in the cutoff, and James McKay goes into the tank just slightly, and then just calls.
And what kind of stack does he have?
he's got more than me. He's got me covered. He had a bigger stack to start the day.
Okay, and he calls on the button?
He calls from he calls from the big blind. So it's fold the button, fold small blind, fold. He calls, and the flop rolls out ace, jack, deuce, one spade.
Okay, so just to repeat, we raised from late position with ace king and an M of 24, got called by James McKay in the big blind. Flop comes ace, jack, deuce with one spade, and we have
ace, king, spades.
Ace, so, king of spades. So we not only have top pair, we also have backdoor straight and flush possibilities. And so with, I'm calculating about 13,000 in the pot. Am I wrong?
Correct, give or take, okay. Give or take.
So,
I think there was actually, yeah, you're very close.
Okay, so 13, 14K in the pot. And James checks, I assume?
He does.
Okay, so we're going to make a healthy bet.
Yeah,
here.
I fire 7 or 8K.
That's great.
And tank call.
Okay, so when he calls your bet here, let's try to start to narrow down his range a little bit. In my opinion, he should be calling with any jack, any ace, possibly some gut shots. I don't know that he would call if he paired the bottom card. But maybe sometimes, just to keep you honest, I guess.
You know, maybe he doesn't want a 3-bet ace 9 suited in that spot. Maybe he doesn't want a 3-bet ace 10. Maybe he has no idea who I am, no read. I fire, he calls.
Okay.
And the turn is a queen.
Okay, so now there's 27-ish in the pot. And the board was ace, jack, deuce.
One spade.
With one spade, and now it's an offsuit queen.
Correct.
So, I mean, before we get to the action, generally, how do we feel about this queen?
Well, very competent player. Very easily two-pair me, like queen, jack. Ace, queen, I'm like this. I mean, there's no way he's not three-betting me with ace, queen.
I don't think ace, queen's a big part of his range either. Yeah,
so
I agree.
I'm like,
yeah,
I
but
mean,
queen,
like,
jack has us in bad shape. And I did say he could call with a gut shot, and so he may have called on the flop with the king 10 and now made it straight.
Absolutely.
Although we do block that with our king, so.
Yes, sir. Check. James checks. I think for a bit, and I say to myself, I think I have in a spot here where I have to call the river. So I check.
I like it because I don't think we have a three streets of value type of hand, especially against a talented player like James.
No chance.
I think we have a good two streets of value type of hand, and also checking helps us lose a smaller pot those times when we did have the queen jack or king 10 we're worried about.
Right, and as played, I'm like, I open myself up to a check raise because he's going to want to lead a lot of rivers here. And to make the river lead look that much more believable, it's a check raise spot for him.
Right, so that's why I love not betting.
Yeah, so I want to keep the pot small because I think I'm prepared to make some kind of, if he leads into me like every pro does, they're never checking first to act. That's the simple fact. They either have the bluff and they're betting, or they have the goods and they're betting. Like, that's what I've noticed. And so I check, and the river is completely blank.
Okay, so it's a brick on the river, and the pot is at 28,000. And James is going to lead here?
He does.
For how much?
A green chip.
Okay, so that's 25,000, yes. If you don't know, which is just a really big bet. And, you know, he has a pretty polarized range here. The problem is, what bluffs does he have? Everything pretty much got there. I don't think he would make this bet with the jack, like if he had flopped a jack with jack 10 or something like that. It's unusual for a player with a modicum of showdown value to make this play, especially for such a large bet. I mean, a smaller bet could be a blocking bet with a hand like king, queen, or, you know, some one pair hands that we can beat. But because he's betting so much, in order for us to call profitably, he needs to be bluffing about a third of the time.
And he has zero bluffs in his range.
I am having so much trouble finding any bluffs
finding
in his range.
Finding any kind of bluff. But here's the mistake that I make in that spot. I get like 1975 all over again and forget that it's ranging, not exacting. And I think I exacted him in my head and said, this guy's got ace 10 in this spot. No 3-bet. And I'm like, I just, you know, I really think he with my check on the turn, he's maybe putting me on something that I've completely whiffed and just tried to see about an ace high flop.
Yeah, that could be. But even then, I don't think that he would value bet that big with ace 10.
Exactly.
I don't think that he's value betting any hand that we can beat for this amount very often.
Yeah, and the fish paid him off. And I was, so what do you think he turned over?
I mean, he's got you beat for sure. It's either queen jack or king 10.
Ace queen.
Okay, so ace queen, which is a surprise because, as you said, I think ace queen should be in his pre-flop three betting range.
Exactly.
But obviously calling with it for deception some of the time. We don't do anything all the time, but I think that generally we want to discount the possibility that he has ace queen. But to me, not really being able to put him on an exact hand, my problem is I can't find any bluffs. And if he's good enough to check call the river and now somehow get to the river against me and bluff me here for this price, I think he deserves the pot. Even if ace king happens to be good, which I don't think it very often will.
Ever is. And every time I've reviewed the play in my hand since it happened, every time it's a fold. Like, I have not once found any reason to call except the moment when I was at the table.
Right.
It's funny how that goes. But yeah,
it really is. And especially when, as you already told us, you haven't been playing a ton of live poker. And maybe online there's a stronger case to be made for calling, although I think even online this is a fold.
Absolutely.
I feel like in the live game, the big bluff on the river is so rare. But the real problem for me is he called you on the flop with something.
Mm-hmm.
And now that hand is turning itself into a bluff somehow. But I can't picture what hand that would be because everything got there.
That's right. That's right. So it's a huge error by myself, right, in that spot. So, you know, realize it, stew over it for a bit. You can't take too long because we're back into a few more hands, and you just got to really focus up, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and work at getting those chips back.
But, yeah. By the way, my favorite thing is when, you know, players like yourself, respected professional players, come on the podcast and tell me a hand they're not happy that they played with how they played it, because it just proves that no matter how good you are at poker, each and every one of us makes mistakes every time we play. And so going home and beating yourself up over, how am I such an idiot? Why did I call him with ace king there? It's never good. And he bet so much, you know, beat yourself up. We can't do that. We're like, okay, I made a mistake. What's happening now? That's what's important in the heat of battle. You must move forward. Go beat yourself up later. But right now we have to play the next hand and shake that off and get over it. So what happened next?
I picked myself up, but I don't think I never went beyond that high watermark of my stack on that day ever again. So the day just, you know, it's typical standard day of poker. The blinds are going up. You're now down to, like, I dusted probably 33K in that spot, right? Give or take 25.
I think more.
Seven,
yeah.
And the raise pre for five. Yeah. So, yeah, it's like 37K, yeah. Right? So.
Yeah. So now you're down to like 100.
Right. And.
Which is still fine at 1224, by the way. Like, yep. You have a stack. It's not like you, now I have to just shove with any two cards.
That's right. And then it was just one of those weird days where it was like two three bets, C bets, got to get away from the hand, lose the pot, you know, lose 20K. Blinds going up, filling out of the big blind a few times, nothing working. And then before you know it, you're like, man, oh, man, like, I'm literally down here. Like, I got 26 big blinds.
Right. And 26 big blinds, by the way, in the main event is not a short stack at all, because with 2 hour levels and with the structure of this tournament, the way things go up, I found a lot of my opponents were in panic mode with that type of stack, maybe because they haven't played the main event before and they're used to other tournaments where, you know, it's, oh no, my M is 12, I gotta like find a spot and get it all in. You have so much time to nurse that stack, so I hope that you didn't feel too compelled to try to make something happen rather than letting the game come to you from there.
Well, and I think you might agree with this with your online experience. The 20 big blind stack is such a comfort zone for online players.
Absolutely.
That's just your comfort zone because everything's, you know, that 20 big blind stack. So, yeah, if you're a live person, you don't have that online experience, you might find yourself, you know, panicking, like, look at me. And then you start going back, I started the day with this. This is all falling apart.
Yeah.
It's negative energy. It's bad mindset.
Your stack
zone.
Is your stack. Yeah. It does not matter what your stack used to be. You have to stay in the moment. Poker is about being right there, present in the moment, and not thinking about the previous moment or even the next moment. And whatever your stack is, you have to play that stack. The poker gods, the deck of cards, and all of your opponents don't care what your stack used to be.
That's exactly right. Absolutely nobody cares except you, and you're stewing over it. But yeah, so... And again, then the day just, like I like to call it, just got very generic after that. And then we eventually get to the spot where I get eliminated. And it was just a simple button, a small blind. And I run into aces. I have ace king. There's no other way to play that.
Yeah,
raise, I three bet, he four bet, shoves,
yeah,
I call.
Yeah, that's not very interesting.
Yeah, there's no interest there at all. Yeah. Good game, main. But no, there was a hand where I got in with Dan O'Brien on day two. And we all know Dan O'Brien, very competent player. When I got up to 231 at my high water point at day two, queens to his jacks on a jack deuce three rainbow, right? So for a massive chunk of my stack there too, right? So just some unlucky spots. If things go a little bit different, man, this whole conversation might not be happening until the weekend.
Yeah, you'd still be in it. Yeah. Well, you know, was this your first time playing the main event?
Yeah, it was. So this was it. It was my inaugural session, and it was amazing.
Yeah, is it something you think you might want to try to do every year from now on?
Yeah, you know, I you don't realize how you shoot yourself in the foot until you get in the spot. So in the past, I've come out here lots of summers, sold packages, done my thing. My financial team was cool with putting up 5K. They tasked me to go sell the other 5K. Well, 71 hours later, at 1.3 markup, I'm sold out. And what's the first thing you say to yourself? You idiot. What? Like, what took you so long? If you can sell out 50% in 71 hours without going public, like not even going on any forums, this is all friends, family, you know, just all people who know me.
You weren't out there begging everybody, please back me. Yeah, no. People know who you are, and they know that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and you just kind of kick yourself in the butt and saying, why did I wait so long? I have so much support and so much friends and colleagues with so much confidence in me that what was I waiting for? But, you know, obviously we tried to do it last year and circumstances prevail, but... we're here now. I've done it. I've got on my belt. I can't wait to do it again. Like, I'm already super excited about next year. You know what I mean? And the thought process that I've already put in to already start preparing for the 2020 main event. You know what I mean?
So, well, I mean, this has been a very different World Series for me than last year was. I mean, I won lots and lots of money last year. And this year has been, you know, extremely frustrating. A lot of bubbles and stuff like that. But I'm still like sad that it's almost over because just this is the thing that I look forward to the most every year. I mean, I love playing in the World Series of Poker, particularly the main event. But, you know, this is just there's nothing like it in the world. And it's just having everybody here in the same city, all of us together competing, but also like bonding. And, so many people make kind of the analogy between this and summer camp for poker players, right?
That's right.
And it's very, very true. And especially as you were talking about, you know, having your crew, like your players that you like to discuss hands with and, you know, kind of run things by them. You know, do you think I should have, you know, three bet in this spot? You know, would you have been able to fold in this particular spot? And those kind of things is as much a part of the experience as actually sitting at the tables and playing.
Well, yeah, I'm fortunate enough to be surrounded by some unbelievable world-class players. Casey, Big Dog, Pocket Five, Jarzabek, got me in to this game several years ago. And along the way, Dipthrong, Mark Herm. He's one of my buddies. Me and him yuck it up nonstop forever. He you know, he's always there for all his buddies, but he's got so much on his plate. But these are the type of guys that I, you know, Paul G's, you can to have the ability to say, hey, Paul, what do you think of this spot? How do you think of it? Dip, what do you think of this spot? You know, and then these guys have just a laundry list of guys they can go to. But these guys are the five-star thinkers in our game, right? So tonight,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's nice to have these guys at your beck and call when you need them. So, yeah, it's been a long time in coming with that whole crew, too. Met them. Dan Kelly was 17 years old. DJK123. Dan Kelly was 17 or 18 years old the first time I went out to Atlantic City and stayed in Dip Throng's Ocean House. I'm looking at this little 17, 18-year-old, and they're like, trust me, this guy's going to be world-class. And sure enough.
Yeah, that so, came to fruition for sure.
Unbelievable how he was, man.
So with the little bit of time we have left here, why don't you tell us kind of – let's get a message out. You know, what do you want the world to know with all you've been through and with your experience of coming out here and finally playing your first main event at age 44, you know, what do you want people to know?
With what I've been through, and a lot of people say it, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. When you're in your lowest moments and you just believe that nothing else is going to be right and it's not going to turn itself around, this is your own thinking doing it to you, doing it, you know. And so you just got to believe that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Keep searching for that light. Understand what that light actually means. Because everyone just knows there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But if you don't understand what that light means and what it's trying to offer you, then you'll always be just searching for that light. It'll be just at the end of the tunnel. You actually got to get to that light at some point. And then when you get there, realize you're there. And that is the moment that things turn. That's probably the best way I can say it. So just believe in yourself and believe that you got it. Confidence is the biggest thing in anything you do.
Such a powerful message. I want to thank you for taking the time today to be on the podcast. I'm sure the listeners are happy to hear your voice again after how many years now?
I think it's been about 3 years. But the other thing is like, I might be like, have 8 or 10 of these TP podcasts under my belt over the years, but I've never been a solo guest. So it's either, you know, me and Casey or me and Mark or me and all the boys. And we're busy half the time, busy fending off and getting your own credibility back, just the way we poke fun at each other. So it was actually really nice to have a one-on-one. And
you mean you got to get a word in edgewise because the other guys aren't here?
Well, here's the thing. All these guys are going to laugh because they know that I don't shut up in general, right? And they always so it's funny. I do a lot of talking, but hey, someone's got
to
do it.
Well, I hope that I can convince you to come on and be my guest again in the future.
Clayton, this was amazing. It was really nice. I was sitting back wondering, what am I going to do today? I look at the message from you, and I was like, it was amazing. I even phoned Jen. I said, you know, Jen, this is crazy. I'm a little bit nervous. She goes, that just means you care. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. If you got the nervous butterflies, it just means you care.
You know, that's really funny you said. It's a little bit off topic, but people might be interested in this. Back in New York, sometimes I teach stand-up comedy workshops. And, you know, a lot of the questions I get, like for beginning comedians, like, what if I get nervous? Like, what if I get nervous? And I tell them, don't be afraid of letting the audience see that you're nervous, because being vulnerable on stage is important. And being vulnerable in life is important because it means you actually care about the outcome. If you're nervous, like, when was the most nervous moment of your whole life? Like, probably the day you asked Jennifer to marry you or
that was, but yeah. Can I tell you when?
Yeah.
I experienced it last week. What? Well, because when I was on the 19th floor of the Tropicana.
Yeah, tell people about that.
Yeah, so I'm just a kid from Canada. We get snow. That's our downfall, okay? We don't do earthquakes up in Canada. So on the first earthquake we had, I was in the poker cafe at the Rio, and all of a sudden I hear ching, 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 and I thought it was a busser going by with a cart full of cups.
Yeah, just rattling.
Cutlery.
Yeah.
No, it was the chandeliers, and once my chair started moving, I realized it was earthquake, and I made my way out, but I was on the ground. The second earthquake, it was 20 after 9 at night, and I was getting ready for day 2, and I was actually starting to shut her down. And all of a sudden, we get the 7.1. And I'm on the 19th floor of a building that was built in 1960. And like I said to you earlier, the earthquake prevention techniques in 1960 probably weren't what they are today. And I was being tossed around, man. While Californians were pulling their lazy boys and putting their feet up, I was panicking for my life. But yeah.
And it lasted a long time, holy that earthquake. Cow. It felt like forever.
But what I actually went Facebook Live for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. And what I said to people in this, just to give you an understanding, I'm on the 19th floor. I'm using the staircase to get down. It's in the middle of the earthquake. So as I'm going down the stairs, it's rocking me back and forth. But yes, we all know that running downstairs is simple. But do it with 150 other panicked people, and my God, has it ever become a very tumultuous situation. But then when I got out on the ground, I started, and I'm, this is going to get serious now, I started to think about 9/11. And I started to think about people trying to get out of from the 108th floor and what they actually went through. And that was way more surreal than just an earthquake, that the building wasn't going anywhere.
And much more serious.
And much more serious. So it put a lot of that into perspective. And so that could have been the most scariest and most nervous racking moment in my life. But yeah. Asking Jennifer to marry me. That wasn't nervous because I was pretty confident in that
you
moment.
You thought you were going to get the yes.
I think I got this, man. I think I got this. So thanks, Jen, for making me get it.
Yeah, well, I want to thank Jen for being such a big part of the episode this week. Yeah. We didn't even know she was going to be here, and she's not. It was really great having a chance to speak with you. You're obviously a great poker player, but more importantly to me, you just seem like a man that kind of has his priorities in line, and maybe just the wisdom of the years or whatever. You seem grateful for the opportunities that you're getting in life, and I wish you nothing but continued success and looking forward to having you back on the podcast.
Thanks, Clayton, man. Thanks you very much for having me. And any listener out there, I thank you for listening because it was the first time I was able to get into some more life's side of things. So
absolutely.
Thank you very
well,
much, Clayton.
We appreciate you being so candid and coming out publicly with kind of this stuff. Tell people where they can find you.
You can get a hold at T-Twist, Tim R. Kelly on Twitter. I just do the Twitter's probably the best way. Facebook, I kind of use it for people I actually do know, and Twitter's more people I'd rather get to know.
Sure.
And
are you still doing coaching? Are you looking for students, or what is your status
The coaching thing, not so much anymore, because I have a particular group of students that I've been working with for a long time, and you know, my schedule with two kids, both boys are right into hockey. So they have 8 and 9 events a week between the two of them, right?
Typical Canadians.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But funny enough, I'm more of a baseball guy than I am hockey, but I'm sports all around. So you can, like I said, find me on Twitter, tim.kelly@tournamentpokeredge.com if you need to send me an email. And yeah, I look forward to hearing from anyone who wants me for anything.
Fantastic. Well, for Tim Kelly, for Dan O'Brien, for Jennifer Kelly, for two boys, age 9-11, somewhere in Canada playing hockey, and for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening.
Let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. With her, a hot pair we will be. While little gambling is fun when you're with me.
I love it.
Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun, fun. Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa. I'll get a heart, show her.